Hello and welcome to the Now Spending Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Andy Tillerson from the band, prog band, should I say, The Tangent. Now, The Tangent are about to release a new album called To Follow Polaris. Now, unlike the other 12 albums in your extensive catalogue, this one is different in that everything that's on it is played by yourself. Is that correct? It is, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes.
It is.
It's actually more than that, but it's not just everything is played. It's every single thing to do with the creation of the album, including the cover, the artwork, the layout, everything. Graphics, the mastering, mixing, conversion to CD, Red Book Masters, and provision of final artwork. Everything is... It was an experiment to see how far you could go as one person.
Well, in the true essence of prog, that must be the most prog-tastic thing you could possibly do is talk to someone from a prog man who's done everything. So about what point did you, this first spark where you thought, I'm going to do this one myself?
It's always been something I've kind of like, thought, well, one day it'd be really nice to finish off and use all the tools in this ancient box of tricks up here that I've been using in so many different places for years. I've done mixing and mastering for other people. I've done it for our albums. I've done it and I've done sleeves and all that kind of stuff before, but I thought, you know, it'd be really good to actually do one package where I'd actually been at the helm throughout all of it. And, you know, it was, the band itself, they were really busy with the, you know, it's during a period where It Bites and Steve Hackett Band, Soft Machine, David Cross Band were all using members of The Tangent for them to, you know, work, earn money and all that kind of stuff, which is great. I don't do so much of the touring with other bands. That's never been my scene. So I stayed at home and made an album. And at the normal point where I hand off to the rest of the group to make their contributions to it, instead I handed it off to myself and said, right, okay, now you're going to finish the album this time. And that's exactly what I did, really. And I did that by, in effect, becoming the other musicians individually over a period of time, by taking on the role of a bass player, role of a guitarist, role of a drummer, and role of a saxophonist and flute player. And, you know, tried to get into the headspace of those different roles. And, you know, it was really interesting. And I learned a lot. And I learned a lot about what my colleagues in the group have to face when they come across one of my records and have to play on it. And I think that I've learned how to make it easier for them in the future and more enjoyable for them in the future because, I know where I've learned a few things that I've been doing wrong over the years. And as being, you know, making music is a lifelong learning adventure, you know,
true.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Very true. But obviously The Tangent, you've got some of the songs are expansive, they're quite long, and there's lots of solo sections and lots of intricate instrumentation. When you have worked on previous Tangent albums and you obviously demo the tracks, mm-hmm. do you leave gaps for the guitarist or whatever to do their solo? Or is some of that already mapped out and you say, I want it to be this way? The reason I'm asking that question is obviously this album sounds like a Tangent album. Mm-hmm. But obviously all the soloing is you. I mean, it sounds like The Tangent. Do you know what I mean?
It's still, when I'm making Tangent records, the previous 12 with a band, yeah. I normally take it to the stage where to a lot of people, it would be finished. There are solos there, there's guitar solos, there's drum parts, everything is done every time. But what I do then is hand off to people who can change the record, who can bring something new to it. And when I send those tracks out to the other musicians, they're never told that they have to play what I've played. Far from it. What they have to do is, I usually send them to it, and I think they all the rules were established years ago. It's basically what they have to do is keep the flavor. Wanted it to be like. If they can keep that flavor right, then they're free to do whatever they want with it because they're bloody good, you know, and really good musicians I get to work with, which is fantastic. And, you know, keeping up with them is a struggle for me because I actually, when it comes to being an instrumentalist, I never feel I'm quite their equal. I'm sort of like, oh, gosh, they know all sorts of technical things that I can't really begin to duplicate, you know. So but I'm constantly learning off them. And I've said it many times that whilst I was being making it to follow Polaris, I've looked to them and thought, how would Luke do this? And I've kind of asked Luke, without ringing him up, saying, what would you do here? I've kind of asked him in my head what he'd do here. I think, maybe. And used their knowledge that I've learned and worked with for so long, yeah.
Because I watched the video to the opening track, The North Sky, which is an absolutely fantastic song, great driving synths and Hammond organ sounds and guitar and stuff. And I'd made a note thinking, oh, I love the kind of rock and roll solo towards the end. And of course, in the video, it's actually done on keyboards, isn't it?
So it is actually played on the keyboard.
It is played on the keyboard. So I think that's amazing because obviously you're playing drums, you're playing bass, you're playing guitar, but there's obviously, there's certain aspects of it where the keyboards, which is your kind of mothership of an instrument, is there doing a lot of the kind of heavy lifting in some cases, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that's sort of like historically tied to progressive rock music.
Very true.
Has been since the very beginning. I mean, you know, it's funny how, you know, as we get older, you know, people become a bit more kind of conservative and kind of thinking, well, isn't it? No, it's not a real key. It's not a real guitar. It's a keyboard player faking it. And that's coming from the same person who 45 years ago was going crazy about, isn't it amazing that Rick Wakeman can do a whole orchestra with just this keyboard? And at the same time, my mum was saying, well, that's not a real orchestra. That's just a, you know, so it just goes on and on and on and back, because this is exactly what happened when somebody invented the church organ in the Middle Ages, because that was imitating trumpets and flutes.
Very true.
You'll have had all these flute guys going, hey, this is disgraceful.
Yeah.
Go back to the old days when it was all proper flutes. you know, that's just how it is. But yes, I having, you know,
but you're hearing this. So I mean, I watched you do some of the drum patterns on the keyboard, and that looks it's incredibly technical and really kind of, as I think you say in the video, you know, I'm using like four hands and drummers. The equivalent, you know, that instead of having two hands, you've got all these fingers, each finger is a hand. So it's really intricate drum patterns and stuff. And it sounds fantastic. So when you're bringing together this vision, this kind of oral vision of this song, what it's going to be like, what comes first, the melody from the keyboards, or do you hear the extra layers of the drums and guitars in your imagination as you pull this together?
There's actually no set rule. You know, it's a case of sometimes songs for me start off with, I'm fiddling about a guitar. I come up, I think, oh, that sounds nice. And then I sit there and work on it until I get something that I can use. Or I can just be improvising. And I do a lot of that. I've got I've got an improvisation station just over there where I sort of sit and I can sort of just record constantly using loopers and different sounds and everything. I can just be improvising and then just think, oh, this is quite useful. Hit a button that puts a marker down on the recording so I can come back to that and have a listen. But really, you know, those are good for getting building blocks and ideas. But the most important thing for me is the idea, you know. It's what I want to write about, you know. Because, like, it's kind of difficult to explain, but, like, if I were to say that I consider my main job as being a protest singer and a storyteller, you know, those are that's what I am. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The prog music is a byproduct of it. So a lot of protest singers ended up doing folk music, you know, because of course, you know, back in those days, if you were protesting against something, you could probably only afford an acoustic guitar to sing. And, you know, and it was an instrument that you could use to accompany yourself. And that's all I'm doing really is singing songs and making some music to go with it. And of course I'm inspired by, you know, jazz fusion and progressive rock music and punk and and heavy metal and of course classical as well, you know. So I just kind of whip all these things together to go with the idea. That's the most important thing, the spark. I made an album called A Spark in the Ether. So
yeah, well, the have I got that one? I think I have. Yeah, I've got that. Get that one, everybody, boys and girls. It's a great album.
That was really to sort of like say where, you know, idea that ideas are there, you capture them and you glue it all together. And
because I'm going to come on to your lyrics and the kind of what drives you in that respect, but you write about, whereas you're a protest singer who's got some message to say and stuff, but the instrumental aspects of the Tangents music is vast. I mean, my favorite track at the moment off the new album is the Acronym.
All right, yes.
It's just spellbindingly good. And of all the Tangent stuff I've heard, I just feel that this is just a peak of some of the stuff I've heard from you. It really is.
That's really nice to hear.
I absolutely love it for lots of reasons. But it has, before you get to the lyrics, which are so observational and so on topic for the world that we live in, the instrumental stuff is complex. As you say, there's aspects of jazz fusion in there. In fact, there's quite a lot of jazz fusion, isn't it? This is where I thought, Return to Forever. And so that is a huge part of, you might say, a protest singer, but the music that drives it and pushes it forward is so complex. And I guess what I was trying to say in my previous question is, in the olden days, when bands were all in the same room, a guitarist would have an idea and he'd start strumming a few chords or playing a riff, and the drummer would come in, the bass player would come in, and the singer would be standing up the corner and they'd start to think, oh, I've got an idea. You're doing all of that on your own. You're hearing all of that on your own. So, you know, but when I said earlier about, you know, using the keyboard to the guitar, this is a totally, I would say this is on another level in some ways. Being in the room with four of the guys and they all come in and start jamming with you is actually, is easier because you just, whatever idea you've got with your three chords or four chords and the singer comes in, that's an easier transitional way to get an idea into a concrete form. Whereas what you're doing is, for me, talking to you now, it's like coming from so many different angles. You're suddenly thinking of all these drum rolls, all these interlacing keyboard and guitar lines, and then thinking about your message, all from the same place.
Right. Well, it's an interesting observation, and I suppose that if you were to think about music in isolation, it would be, how on earth does that happen? Yeah. Okay. Because, you know, I would have the same questions. I'd be listening to Close to the Edge and thinking, how did you decide to do that? That bit happen? Of course, you get that. But you see, like, even if you're on your own, I mean, the procedure I'm going through here is not that dissimilar from, like, let's say, somebody who's writing a novel. The novelist, who is just one person, has to invent a number of characters. He has to invent a situation, and he has to be able to develop exactly what each one of these characters would do in relation to the actual situation. And when this character speaks, who the author might well despise, this character, who the author's, you know, pretty big on, will have to react in a certain way. And the character that is not nice, yeah, might be acting correctly. And the author has to take all this into account and know what would be happening here. How would a person react to that? What would they say if this person has said that? And if you follow my logic, that's exactly what I did here. You know, I did something on the drum parts. Mm-hmm. And how will the bass player react to that? It's been a part of the interview cycle where I've told this story quite a few times, but it's still valid, is in that there was a situation where the drummer fell out with the bass player on this record, and both of them were me, because I ended up having an argument about, you know, because the bass player wanted to do something. Mm-hmm. And the drummer wanted to do something at the point, and they were both very, very, very bloody awkward about it. And both of them had a point. Both of them had a great line for that bit. And I had to sort of, you know, mediate between these two things. And that's what happens. I mean, an author writing a book, if there's an argument between two characters and a major decision to be made, the author's got all that going on his head, thinking, you know, how am I going to get out of this, you know? And that's basically, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about the bass player, because actually this is his first gig. This is his first part. Now, of all the things you can do on the keyboard, you could have easily perhaps just done the bass lines on the keyboard, but you decided, no, I'm gonna pick up a bass guitar and learn to do that.
I think that... You know, I think that deciding to do it on a bass guitar as opposed to going for it on a keyboard, do you know, I think it's the one thing, the biggest thing that made it transition from a demo into feeling like a real band, because I wouldn't have thought it, but it really did totally change it. As I say, I did have this huge obstacle in the road. I play in a band that's got Jonas Reingold on bass, and, you know, to be fair, he is one of the best in the business. You know, he's a fantastic. He's up there with the greats, is Jonas. Me as a complete beginner with a cheap bass, it was kind of a bit daunting, but. You know, I also live in this world of amazing technology, and without cheating, I, in a sense, went through the album very slowly, working, okay, what do I need to play here? And I've been literally going through it a couple of bars, maybe 30 seconds at a time. You know, obviously when there was something where the bass is just going, doom, 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 doom,
yeah, yeah.
Doom, 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 I could do that. That's no problem. But where there were some complicated runs, I had to take a lot of shots at them, you know. I couldn't just sort of like go, yeah, yeah, straight, bang, 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 bang. Jonas, if he wanted to, could deliver a tangent record in a couple of days, you know. He could actually do it in 2 hours, but he put some real effort into it. And after a couple of days, he'll usually send me back absolutely fantastic files. Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted them to, I never thought they'd be as good as his, and they're not. But I decided, A, keep it within the bounds of possibility. Don't try to be Jaco Pastorius. And then I thought, well, and also just spend as long as you want on getting it right as you possibly can. So I spent literally weeks and weeks and weeks doing bass guitar parts. Taking a huge amount of summer last year was just me sitting in this room on this chair with a bass guitar, pressing this button, Just go, no. I mean, you know, I'm starting to get memories of it now just by thinking about it. But you know, so
that a bass player used up all the studio budget.
he used an awful lot of it up. Yeah, many, many cups of tea, huge amounts of coffee, and quite a few relaxants in the evening. So it was a real adventure, and I learned a lot about the bass guitar. So
yeah. Well, it sounds great. Now I don't know if this track's on the album. I've listened to it as part of the collection, but on my press release, it doesn't mention this track. But it's another one of my favourites. It's called Tea at Betty's Simulation.
Tea at Betty's Simulation is in fact all keyboards. That one is not part of the same recording session. It's a bit earlier. But it's been a kind of spare track that's been knocking about. And so it was, record companies do like to have their bonus tracks these days.
Well, I'm going to say good, because I absolutely love it, because it's such an interesting track, because it starts off like an acoustic jazz trio playing in New York with a rainy night, and it's got that kind of imagery to me. Like, and then it turns into Miles Davis, and then about 6 minutes in, it turns into this prog metal track, and then 12 minutes on, we're into this kind of funky section. I mean, it's a, you know, how, I was just thinking that on keyboards,
classic case, it was an idea. And it was a joke. And I kind of thought, wouldn't it be fun if, you know, because I'd been to Betty's Tea Rooms in Harrogate. Now, and Betty's Tea Rooms is a kind of posh place. Yeah. And they occasionally do have a pianist playing sort of like cocktail lounge music in the background. Sometimes it's a trio at night or a special day, they'll have a trio play. And I just imagined what would happen if the trio were sort of the, you know, it was like the trio of death with and McLaughlin and Billy Cobham or something, and they were all just sort of like sitting there just trying to be good boys and get their paycheck at the end, you
and
know,
then boom,
but suddenly they just get bored of all this, just start going crazy, and of course, the beauty of it is that they all come to the end, you know, and then they just end up back on the original boring cocktail jazz that they were doing to start with. And the audience is still just quietly applauding and taking no notice of the musicians, which is, you know, kind of just a little joke, really. I think.
Well, it comes, it works really, really well. Now, you mentioned earlier you're kind of a protest singer. And I think another thing that's makes the tangent stand out is I've never seen any other website by a musician that has a button that's called the manifesto.
somebody found it.
where you talk about where you stand, it's like a kind of mission statement, not just for the band, but for you personally. Yeah. And one of the things I found really interesting is how, because the lyrics are fantastic to this album. I mean, they are for any Tangent album, but this one I felt really resonated with me personally. But when you talk about that, the lyrics just kind of just come into your head. And you don't necessarily always write them down because they're already formulating into melodies.
Mm-hmm.
Elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, it's something that, you know, I first discovered when I was recording an album called Le Sacre de Travail back in 2013. I'd done one, the previous one to that was called Com, and I'd been very disappointed by my vocals in there. And to be frank, I've never been a fan of my own voice, and I've never really thought of myself as a good singer. And I thought I'd like to do something to improve this, you know, going forward, I'd like to find another way of doing it. And round about that time, I was watching some documentary and about rappers, and and sometimes how freestyle rappers literally approach the microphone with nothing, you know, nothing written down. And they're just going to they pick the microphone up and they start. And although that particular form of music has only made minor inroads into my sort of like musical preferences, I do like some, but by no mm-hmm. means all. There was something about that that I just found interesting. And I just thought, well, I wonder how this would happen if I applied it to my work. And the first thing, you know, after I'd got the first few experiments done, I listened back to them. The first thing, it just came over a million, it was just like hugely important, is that you and I probably both know that a human being sounds entirely different when he's reading something to when he's saying something. So if it doesn't matter who it is, it doesn't matter if it's Biden, Churchill, or anybody like that. If you're reading, yeah, you sound different from when you're speaking. And I suddenly realized that this was going to majorly impact the way I delivered, in that from that album onwards, I was no longer reading. I was actually communicating without that extra layer of writing it down, editing it, and shit. So in the end, I do the editing with technology. I write the music and then I improvise over it, and I find the bits that I like that I've done, and I keep them. Wow. And I keep on adding to them until I've got something that sounds great. And it just sounds like, you know, because you've read the manifesto, which sounds terribly pretentious, but I'm a progressive rock musician. That's what we do.
I'm going to say it's absolutely essential. I'm surprised. This is where it started for every prog band on the planet, having a manifesto page.
Yeah. I don't want to lose my thread, but like, putting this into a situation where I'm just saying things is like conversing, you know. So that I haven't rehearsed the answer to this question, and I'm not reading it; it's just coming out of my head. And as a result of that, I mean, if I suddenly decide, I grab this paper here and said, a complete guide to the band's recordings and related works and where to buy them. That's what's written on this piece of paper. And that doesn't sound the same, is it? So I could not repeat any single sentence that I've spoken to you during this interview again. You know, it was once only. And that,
when the lyrics come down then, and you piece them all together, obviously from that point, that's when, if you were going to, when you're going to do a live concert, that's when you learn them. So that you do remember them to just say them next time.
Then I actually have to go back and do something which I don't like, which is listening to my own records, because I find them difficult to cope with, I'd rather listen to something else, to be honest. But I make the records for other people, and. And I listen to records that people have made for me and all of us, you know. So that's my personal choice, because I spend so much of my life actually working on this music that when it's over, I'd rather just get on with the next thing and listen to somebody else's music for a while.
You know? Well, lyrically, this album is really interesting. I've got like copies of some lyrics over my desk in front of me, because now that you've told me how it's come together, it makes it even, it's elevated it in my own mind to be more incredible, really. I mean, the Aquanism is, as I said, one of my favorite tracks, but that really, the lyrics there are so observational about how we're feeling and how, what's going on. You know, so you turn on the news and then you turn off the news, and then you go back to you try then to carry on in your normal life when you subconscious has been told, you know, you've got Musk, Putin, the climate change bubbling around your head, and we live in interesting times. And I think that track in particular, how you've kind of worded that. I mean, there's some great lines as well. Some twats decide we need a war now. But there is some. It's really observational. There's other tracks, which other lyrics, which kind of bring in the feel of how we live through social media and, you know, how we're kind of influenced by other people's creativity and we're just kind of like passive to a lot of things that are going on. I mean, I could read out chunks of it, but it's really interesting how you've said that this just flows down and you just piece it together, almost as if the way you put the lyrics together is how the music comes together.
Well, that's right. I mean, yeah. In fact, in the song "A Like in the Darkness," there's a line in that song which is "And somewhere in the grisly fog, I glue components together."
That's exactly
what you're doing. You're just sort of like taking ideas and sort of making sense of them and juxtaposing them with others and slamming them together to sort of, which helps you make points and Yeah, it's, I write about the world that I live in. I don't want to become stuck into, you know, forever writing about either sort of like fantasy fiction, as historically many progressive rock bands did. I want to write about current affairs, but I don't want to be a straight out punk band or anything like that. You know, It's a sort of measured thing. A lot of people assume that, you know, I'm my music's political. It's only political in that, like, it's a comment on the world as it is now. I don't particularly really get behind one political party and support them or anything. I just want to sort of like. A better world than the one we live in, really.
Yeah, it doesn't come across as political. It comes across as that you, when I was listening to the music and then looking at the lyrics, that it just kind of, it's observational. It's kind of like you're tuning into what I was thinking, you know, and it brings the music onto a different level, because I think you can have this word prog can feel as if it's too much looking backwards rather than looking forwards.
I think it can be, you know, and, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm really nostalgic for a lot of it. I love it. I love the old stuff. And I also really like it when people produce new stuff that sounds like old stuff. You know, I'm just as much into that as possible. What happened when I formed the Tangents a long time ago was that I actually wanted to do something that I felt was a hole in the market at the time. And the hole in the market was that I felt that we're missing something that's really bloody English, you know, because we were being hammered by the Swedes. Goated and the Flower Kings and Kaipa and all those guys, and the Americans with Spock's beard and more, you know. I formed the Tangent. We did these two really retro progressive rock band albums that brought back jazz into progressive music. It had been left out by the 80s guys quite a lot, and we kind of really wanted to put that back in. And yeah, they were quite retro. But after two albums, I thought, right, we've done that now. we've got to do something else. And whilst we've managed to keep the nub of what the Tangent was on those first two albums, we've obviously had to, bring on more influences and take those influences from periods that happened way, way after progressive rock happened and a long time after the music that died alone, as it were. because... You know, if Yes had originally formed now, they would have a much bigger palette of things to choose from than they did when they did form. Because when they did form, they were taking influences from the Beatles, from Ornette Coleman, from television shows of the time, Stravinsky and all that sort of stuff. Well, we use all those things too. But we've also got, you know, Adele, we've got Taylor Swift, we've got rap, we've got hip hop, we've got death metal and stuff that nobody had even dreamed about then. What do? Do we build a wall and say, no, no, we're a progressive rock band, so we can't use anything on that side of the wall? Well, that's just not going to work for me, you know.
Well, it's not. Well, it's not progressive, is it, technically?
Well, I've never really actually subscribed to the idea that progressive rock music is the idea of making the band better and more.
Mm.
I've always subscribed to the fact that progressive music to me is music that starts at point A and progresses to point B, maybe goes through another point C, then goes back to B, then arrives at D, then takes a short holiday at Z, and then comes back to A again. You know, it's, you know, it's the music itself is progressing. It's not the artists who are progressing.
True. Yeah,
I don't think that's it.
Yeah. But you're a band that's, you've been with Inside Out Music, Sony, for 22 years. Is that right? I mean, that's in itself is incredible for a, you know, for a progressive rock band. You know, the way the music industry the last 22 years has changed, and the way that the music consumers have changed the way they listen to music. You know, with 85% of people streaming and literally 15%, you know, CD and vinyl. And you're signed to a major label and you've continued to be with them. That in itself is remarkable.
Well, it's something that obviously I've kind of noticed. you know, and it basically Inside Out is just, you know, when I actually think about it now, they've been a powerful force in my life for a third of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been.
Well, I mean, because
I was in my 40s when I first signed to them, and I'm still signed to them now. And I have no idea how long it will carry on. I mean, I've found myself moving from a label in where I was very proud to be rubbing shoulders with other artists like Roy Nastolt and things like that. And now I find myself, you know, hey, I'm on the same label as Yes, Jethro Tull. Whoa, I'm on the same label as these guys, you know? And and they sell a lot more than I do. Now, you know, one day, you know, Inside Out may sort of get some telephone call from Sony up at the top and say, well, you've got to get rid of a few bands. And I kind of expect to be among the ones that they have to get rid of. And when that does happen, if it does, and I really hope it doesn't, but if it does, I won't be annoyed or anything. I'll be just saying thank you for the most amazing opportunity to have done what we've done and to be supported by a label of their stature for such a long time. They've re-signed my contracts more times than I can count now.
And probably different people, because people forget when they think about the music business is that if it was a normal job, people leave after 3 or 4 years. So during that 22 years, the people that you first met are probably long gone.
And it's a whole new... Left.
And the people that are there now are being reintroduced to your music, and you're just kind of seen as part of the fabric. I think it's great.
It's lovely. There's only one person left from the original Inside Out that I joined. Yeah. That's Thomas Weber. All the rest I've kind of met along the way, and I've usually formed exceedingly good relationships with the people I've worked with as my product managers over the years, and I'm still friends with them. You know, I can still ring them up or meet them and have a chat. You know, so that's really good. I think we, you know, obviously there's some kind of feeling that our music is worth pursuing, and it's worth pursuing for reasons that are other than, yeah, they make millions of dollars, because we don't, you know. But like, it's good to know that there's a company out there who can actually sort of think, well, we'd like to build this, we'd like to work with it and see where it goes.
You know? So I suppose one of the biggest change you've seen that 22 years ago, the market or the world that you inhabited was purely CD, really. The vinyl had declined into the background, and now it's kind of rebalanced itself. So you're now the new album's going to come out on vinyl and CD.
And on CD and on digital. And of course, you know, and of course, like Inside Out have recently embraced Bandcamp and have their own account there and everything. So, you know, that's, it's all, it's a thing. It's just going forward, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and we're all just jumping over the obstacles and clearing the hurdles and working out if we could stay here another year, you know, and that's what we do, you know.
Well, I'm sure you will. This is a great album. And when does it come out? What's the date? Is it May?
May the 10th, actually.
May the 10th. Yeah. May the 10th.
Two singles out now where there's one called The North Sky and there's another one called The Single, which dropped yesterday. So
Just before we go, we must mention that first, The North Sky, the first video, because because I know you do everything. Did you do that as well, or did you have someone helping you with that?
No, that was I put a small rucksack and a very, very, very warm coat on, and I trudged about 3/4 of a mile through a snowdrift to the location, set up a tripod that I had, and put the cameras up, and stayed up there on my own for about. I was there for about 4 hours shooting all the stuff I wanted to do.
Miming to your stuff and then editing it all together,
Taking one of the few advantages of being old is that I was able to pipe the music to mime to direct to my hearing aids. There was no computer there, but the camera is recording the music. It's getting the music from Bluetooth, which is on a phone that's in my pocket. That's sending the music to the camera, and it's sending the music to my hearing aids at the same time. So there you go.
Fantastic. So will there be any opportunity for you to tour this album, or is that something you might?
I don't know. I mean, you know, the Tangent's main focus in life is making records. And occasionally, because we like each other and we enjoy going out and doing tours, we do them. But a Tangent show is a really mega hard piece of work to put together. You know, if we have a gig, somebody says, okay, you're playing at the Albert Hall in November. Well, that's it. I'm booked now till November, just getting it all sorted out. It'll take forever, you know? It'll take forever, and that's without lights. We don't use lights or anything, you know? We turn up wherever we are, and if there's lights, we play, you know? Yeah. You know, and if there aren't lights, we still play. So that's you know, it's all such incredibly, intensely complicated stuff to put together and play.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we do it, we put a lot of work in and we do it. But, you know, the difference between how we were in 2002 and now is that, you know, of course, like when we first toured, we had 2 albums to pick material from. So
now you've got 13.
Now we have to decide which 8 we're not going to even look at, you know. You know, you sort of like look away. If you take away 8 of them, you've still got 5 albums to choose material.
Yeah, and you have, and if you've got tracks that are potentially sometimes 13, 14 minutes long, then
that's right.
It's tricky, isn't it?
You know, we usually only have a maximum of 2 hours to play. So, you know, it's a case of, we have 2 long ones and then we've got a few other ones to go in the middle. And then there's the fact that I end up yakkering on at the audience. As you can probably tell, I talk a lot, you see. So,
thanks a lot, Andy. The best place for people to go is the www.thetangent.org.
Fantastic. Well done for saying that. Yeah, great stuff. It is.
I could even add /Polaris, and that will take you even deeper into the website where the new album is. So that's out, and it's out on vinyl and CD. And for all of you watching and listening, get a physical copy on CD or vinyl if you really want to experience
it. That's correct,
and get close to the artwork. Well, thanks very much, Andy. Thank you for your time today. And hopefully we'll catch up as another time. But good luck with the album. It's, as I said, it's already my favourite Tangent album. Superb.
That's very kind of you to say that. And I'll try not to let anybody else in the band know that you said that.
Thank you. All right, okay, take care.
But very best wishes. And thank you for taking the time to bring music like ours to people's attention.
It's no problem at all. You.
genuine.
Thank you.
All right. Cheers.
So a huge thank you to my guest, Andy Tillerson, from the band The Tangent. And the album is called To Follow Polaris. I've had an advance chance to listen to it, and it's absolutely superb. And it seriously is my favourite Tangent album. It's all done by Andy, but that doesn't take anything away from the members of the band. I mean, that was fascinating, hear that, how Andy's vision and how he creates the music and plays all the different parts, right? And everything, the artwork and everything. It really is a real great insight into an artist like The Tangent and Andy and how all of this comes together. I find it fascinating. Even the way the lyrics are pulled together, just literally a stream of consciousness based on how Andy sees the world. And the way that Andy sees the world is very observational, very, very astute, fantastic stuff, great music. If you're into progressive rock, jazz fusion, really dynamic stuff that has lots of light and shade, check out the album. It's out soon. And make sure you buy a CD or a vinyl version. Superb. And the track that Andy mentioned, which is a bonus track to me, is also one of the favourites as well. So superb stuff. So thank you for being here. Thank you for watching. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, to the Naspany Magazine podcast. Visit the website at naspany.co.uk. See us on Instagram, Threads, X, Facebook. Join the Facebook group where you can talk to lots of different collectors from around the world. Remember, music is the healer and the doctor. Please keep spinning those discs, and I shall see you very, very soon.